Hey, if you've been to Black Hat or DEF CON or something else like that, you might have seen the AI Cyber Challenge. But how would you like to talk to the person who's been running it? Stick around. You're going to enjoy this. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Carney. I'm your host for today, and I have Andrew with me. Andrew Carney is the director of DARPA's AI Cyber Challenge. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, first of all, it sounds like a really important thing to do. So tell me a little bit about your background. What led you to get to this point in your career and taking on this role?
So I've spent most of my career pretty steeped in sort of reverse engineering, vulnerability research kind of disciplines. I did my undergrad and master's in computer science. I discovered that sort of digging into the sort of assembly and inner workings of compiled code was really exciting. And then I discovered Capture the Flag, discovered sort of competitive hacking. And then my day job for nearly 15 years was really focused on, like I said, vulnerability research. And then in the evenings, I would play CTF. A lot of really understanding systems, software systems and hardware systems at every possible level, eventually led me to DARPA, where I have spent 7 years plus in one way or another kind of working on different cybersecurity programs.
Wow, that's fascinating. So you're a real hands-on practitioner. A lot of times you think of someone from DARPA. Yeah, they joined as a GS-1 doing the time tick for WWV and then worked their way up through the pay scales. But you're a hands-on guy, which is awesome. And sounds like you're just the right person to do that. Now, for people who aren't familiar with the AI Cyber Challenge, kind of known as AI lowercase XCC, what is it? And then why did DARPA decide that, well, now makes a good time to do it? In fact, it's been going for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, we kicked off in August of 2023, and we just had our sort of final event at DEF CON this past August. So it's been quite a roller coaster sort of 2 years. I'm getting ahead of myself. So AICC is a competition designed to challenge competitors to develop autonomous systems that can find and fix vulnerabilities in source code, sort of at speed and scale. So at the speed and scale that we need to secure the internet at large. That's really the focus.
Wow. So we're really, what you're doing is you're focusing on using AI in a positive way instead of, you know, AI to hack. It's actually an anti-hack tool. It's designed to go ahead and identify vulnerabilities, but instead of exploiting them, to go ahead and does just identify it? Does it just wave a little flag and say, hey, over here? Or does it go, hey, wait a minute, I fixed it for you, boss. We're all good, or somewhere in between?
So the systems generate patches that are kind of have to pass the same tests that you would have to pass as an individual contributor to that to a real software project. So they're passing every unit test. They're passing they're passing a set of private tests that we developed as part of the competition organizers to ensure that the patches did not prevent the software from functioning as intended. This idea of non-interference, right?
Now, is the focus on anything in particular, like critical infrastructure? Because I saw a lot of critical infrastructure and I walked around that display at DEF CON. Or is this for home users of Windows 10, hoping not to have to upgrade next month?
Yeah. So, I mean, we live in a world today where our critical infrastructure both depends on open source software and sort of volunteer contributors and maintainers, and at the same time is under attack all the time from nation state level adversaries. We read about in the news all the time about these sorts of attacks. And there's sort of an incongruency there. There's a mismatch between the attention level of effort and I think our ability to secure that environment. And it's important to our daily lives. So the idea with the competition was if we can develop tools that take existing program analysis techniques, software kind of analysis techniques that have been developed for decades, and pair them with this sort of new on the scene generative AI, LLMs kind of flavored technology, and really see what can they do to make a dent in this sort of massive kind of technical debt issue we have with just, you know, relying on software that we can't secure fast enough. I think that this idea that we get really excited about developing new features and like putting more layers on our tech stacks, like that's how we progress. That's how we sort of advance as a society. But at the same time, we need to make sure that foundation is rock solid. So AICC, in a lot of ways, was focused on critical infrastructure to solidify that foundation, to make it resilient and robust so that we could keep building kind of new, exciting technologies on top of it.
And that makes a really good place to start because, you said, we all depend upon it. I know that I'm down here in the Tampa St. Pete's area. I think it was last year the Oldsmar water supply got tampered with by an external actor. It was detected fairly early, and so no serious damage done. But the point is that if you look at a lot of this critical infrastructure, it's not run centrally by the government. We don't have a whole team of people from NSA all tasked with defending Americans' critical infrastructure. A lot of these guys are on their own. They talk to power companies, and they might share one cybersecurity consultant among three or four of them. And so at best, you get some fractional attention. So as we look at the challenge going forward, I think being able to leverage AI is going to be absolutely huge for organizations that either don't have the budget or the understanding to apply smart people to the problem. And quite honestly, getting the best people is a little bit hard sometimes when you're going to go ahead and say, well, hey, you can come work for the local water authority or something like that. It just doesn't sound as sexy as doing something really cool. But when you do this competition, I mean, it was a 2-year competition, but the prize money was non-trivial. I mean, I saw the first prize, Team Atlanta, $4 million prize, Trellobits, $3 million, Theory, $1.5. How many teams started the challenge? And then what made these teams exceptional relative to the others?
So, you know, a year and a half ago, we had over 90 teams registered from around the world, all with, you know, an interest in kind of taking on this problem. And then by the time we got to the beginning of our semifinal event a year ago, we had just over 40 teams. So there was some attrition. I think folks realized this was a lot harder. I think in general, the sort of automated program repair, the patching component, is an extremely hard problem. It kind of touches on some very like core program synthesis challenges that are open, hard problems to solve in the research community. And we were asking teams to do that and do that on real software. So the challenge was extremely hard. We honestly, leading up to semifinals, we really were excited to see sort of proof of life. So a year ago, we gave the teams 5 large open source projects, and we created synthetic kind of versions of synthetic forks that had tens to hundreds of synthetic commits that introduced new novel vulnerabilities that no LLM had ever seen before, that no team had ever seen before. And then we handed those repositories to the systems with no human intervention. And they were able to find a respectable number of the synthetic vulnerabilities and patch also a respectable number. But the really, I think the key issue there was one of the teams found a 0-day. They found an issue in SQLite that we got to disclose. And so then we were sort of off to the races. Then it was, okay, we know that if we combine sort of LLMs and program analysis techniques that we can find and patch real vulnerabilities. Now let's see how far we can push the teams at the same time that industry is pushing the models. And that sort of led us to DEF CON this past year, which was very exciting, where the teams found nearly 80% of all the synthetic vulnerabilities we gave them, patched over 60% of them. And this is in 54 million lines of code. So a massive, like 20 plus repositories from real open source projects. And then found 18 0-days, of which they patched 11. And we're still going through the disclosure process on those, just to make sure that they're remediated properly. It's been a really exciting process and sort of showing both the security research community that we can combine these technologies in a much more effective way, but also that now all of the team's tools are available open source. They are available to the public at large to use. And so we really want this technology to sort of secure, be the sort of a rising tide that lifts all boats in the software security space.
Now, do we concern ourselves, you know, from DARPA, from the natural thought about national security concerns about entities that are not friendly to the United States of America exploiting either the first half of this to say, whoa, look what we found, or the second half to say, let's keep these Americans out of our systems. And yet you're sort of an honest broker through this whole process to say, this is science. This isn't politics. Is that a correct evaluation?
100%. We don't have anything to hide here. The program is wholly focused on defense. And I would say, too, that the program's bar for what constitutes a software defect or a vulnerability is, I think, reasonable enough where patching is warranted, but not so mature or sort of exquisite that it's super useful as a, you know, on the to exploit.
And we're still early on in a way because you've just wrapped this up. Now, it seems to me, my thought is that this has been going for 2 years and the world has been shifting massively. How closely did the final goalposts look like to those that you had advertised to the 90 plus teams who decided to get onto the field? And what was that really part of the expectation that, yeah, this is going to be a moving objective?
I think that's one of the big differences between this challenge and some of DARPA's other challenges. When DARPA runs a challenge, the goalposts tend to be set so far away from where we are currently that any progress is useful. In the first DARPA Grand Challenge with self-driving cars, none of the cars made it to the finish line. But that was a super useful set of data points for identifying, okay, this is the edge of what we can do today. And then in the following event, then multiple cars finished. So it's I think a useful metric just in general of what we're capable of kind of when we really kind of apply ourselves as a society, as a community of researchers.
So you're intellectual pump priming, if you will. You're getting people to focus on something you might not otherwise do so, but in the context of a challenge, in the context of something that's organized, and of course the esprit de corps that goes with going after a prize and eventually potentially even winning it, will keep people motivated long into a night and evening, a weekend, and all the other extra time that it takes to accomplish all that. So for chief information security officers, one of the things that I think the first thought is that, okay, can I just go ahead and download this stuff and then turn it on, and now I don't have to worry about my current team that's doing it. I can, you know, deal with the big boss who wants me to cut headcount. They want AI everywhere. Or is this really just something that is only going to put smart people on steroids, but you don't really want to turn over the car keys and say, yeah, have at it?
So, I mean, I see these sorts of technologies generally as force multipliers. You know, I think when we're thinking about the folks that are attacking our networks, availability of exploitable vulnerabilities is not typically sort of the limiting factor for them. But on the defense side, it is very challenging to do vulnerability management across all the different devices, across all the different code bases that we have to deal with. So I think the idea that AICC technology, which is available and can be used with some, you know, amount of scaffolding, it can be used. It does not sort of displace anyone. It empowers them. Because defense is still so incredibly challenging. I think the real opportunity here, so in the final competition, just over a month ago, we demonstrated that you could reason over millions of lines of source code, find real defects, and then patch them for a few $100s per issue. That the sort of the cost, it's a very cost-effective approach. But those patches may still require review by humans, depending on the underlying code base, the types of defects, the types of issues they're finding, that can be tunable based on your preferences. So I'm also a program manager at ARPA-H, where I focus on healthcare cybersecurity. And ARPA-H was an active collaborator with DARPA on this challenge. And in healthcare, we have a lot of challenges related to complexity. But our concerns are slightly different than some other, I'd say, security use cases. So in healthcare, availability is king if we're thinking about the CIA triad. In other domains, that's not the case. So failing open in healthcare may be preferable to failing closed, which might be ideal in sort of another use case. So the idea that we can start reasoning over and having solutions, having these patches in a very timely kind of cost-effective way is really exciting, I think, from a vulnerability management perspective, because that means that we can sort of as customers, we can talk to our software vendors, talk to our supply chain, and encourage the use of this technology. And DARPA is also interested in helping people apply this technology to their software, to their infrastructure. I'm happy to sort of plug our availability for engagement on this front.
Well, sure, yeah, and there's no reason not to do so. So we're good. But observations I'm thinking, because this challenge was done in a controlled environment. Now, when we say, hey, can we extend this? I can download the tools as a CISO. I can tell my team, hey, dive in. It's Christmas early. Go ahead and grab some tools and have some fun with them. But do we think this is going to work well in today's kind of messy world of legacy systems? We've got third-party vendors who may or may not be patching, who may not even be able to control that. We've got stuff we haven't done for a while. The technical debt has been building up because you don't have the resources. Is that going to just simply say, hey, it's like a kid in a candy store and it's going to find problems all over the place? Or can we keep it focused in a way that we can prioritize what we're doing to reflect our business desires to say, yeah, you know, you can look at a lot of stuff, but let's aim this cannon in this direction because that's going to be the biggest benefit.
So it's absolutely tunable and focusable. I would also say that it's sort of, I think the success of the competition and the tools being available, I think asks the question sort of us all, like, I mean, the reason that we have to prioritize, the reason that we triage, the reason that we manage kind of our attack surface is because we have limited resources with which to address a subset kind of that attack surface at any given time. Mm-hmm. And I think AICC's sort of price point here points us to a world where maybe we can actually fix everything. And when I say fix everything, I mean that we can address like all the low-hanging fruit and like increasingly address like issues further and further kind of up the difficulty or complexity scale, and that we can simplify kind of the remaining vulnerability management tasks in a big way. We're not there yet, but also this is the worst the technology will ever be. It's only
going to
get cheaper. Yeah.
It's going to get cheaper, it's going to get better, going to get faster and things like that. But of course, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, we still have the concern of adversary use of AI. And is DARPA seeing anything that suggests that the capabilities, if this were considered to be some sort of a digital arms race, how are we doing? Is this something where the advantage tends to go to the offense, which is a little bit different than conventional warfare, where typically the advantage goes to the defenders? What are you seeing there if we look at it from kind of a game theory perspective? Is where is the advantage today, and is it going to stay that way?
So I think I think this type of technology that AICC's sort of approach to addressing the issue is an opportunity for defenders to really gain an edge. Even when we don't have source code, there are lots of program analysis techniques that let us reason over binaries, that let us reason over network traffic, that let us reason over sort of software artifacts, data artifacts in general. And the idea that we can use different flavors of kind of AI-powered systems to reason over those while also using those kind of more traditional program analysis techniques to weed out hallucinations, to prevent false positives, it's really exciting and I think an interesting set of use cases that other like scientific domains especially might struggle with because they don't necessarily have that deterministic sort of like ground truth analysis piece.
Interesting.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, it does sound really exciting. So as we go forward and more organizations say, hey, the AICC has produced something of great value, we're going to adopt some of this, put it to work, and hey, it's actually doing good stuff. Now, as you had said, it's always useful when you're dealing with AI to have a human in the loop. But if somebody decides to go ahead and just, you know, cross the streams and connect the wires there, and an AI-generated patch fails or even causes an outage and things like that, what are your thoughts on liability? I mean, should chief information security officers think about governance or compliance expectations? Where's the risk if you look at from the tools not doing exactly what we hope they would do?
I think when we think about non-deterministic kind of AI, we're talking about an unreliable source of information and task completion. The good news is that we have a lot of experience working with those. They're called humans, right? So the idea, I think certainly, and arguably we can tune our work, our use cases and the workflows with the AI-based systems in potentially, I think, a much more transparent way than we can potentially change the behavior of, you know, peers, colleagues, et cetera. So, and it can also be a collaborative engagement. So the idea of having an AICC kind of system or a cyber reasoning system, that's a CRS is the term that we've been using for a while at DARPA. The idea that the CRS can be this sort of collective combination of knowledge where multiple people are engaging and improving the sort of more deterministic kind of process management and strategy and tactics kind of component that sort of is keeping the less deterministic components kind of making them reliable or as reliable as possible. I think that's super exciting. We saw something interesting, I think, during the competition. As I mentioned before, automated program repair is this like hard program synthesis problem. The idea that all of the work you do finding a vulnerability actually improves your ability to patch it in that moment, I think is very, very powerful. So that by combining these two, there is a sort of greater than the sum of its parts element here, where all the knowledge you have about the program, about the control flow, about the constraints, about the different data types, all of that that led you to the vulnerability, you can immediately inform your patch generation, which is not really how we do patch development in kind of software development life cycles generally. There are multiple sort of manual steps or the transmission of information that we play a little bit of a game of telephone, right? We lose information throughout that process. So I think that's another interesting space where the closed feedback loop on the automation side is potentially very powerful. And I think would be a net benefit in terms of like reducing liability and risk.
Interesting. And that makes good sense. One of the things we look at, we have software that we purchase or release. I guess we never really own the software unless we write it ourselves. But there's a lot of open source that's out there. Is there somebody or some entity that would make the logical lead in applying these type of AICC tools to open source? Because it has, of course, a very large benefit, but it's one of those things, well, you do it. Well, why don't I do it? Well, let's get Mikey. He'll do it.
So I don't think there's any one, you know, organization necessarily. We've been working with the Linux Foundation and the Open Source Security Foundation and a few other sub foundations there to ensure that we're able to connect with open source project maintainers effectively. And so they've been incredibly helpful as partners throughout the last few years and continue to be as we take the technology that's been open sourced and kind of get it into these project dev pipelines. I will also say that if you're a standalone kind of software developer or project maintainer, that email us at AIXCC@DARPA.mil. And we are actually happy to help provide, you know, support and resources if you work on a critical infrastructure related project. We want to help folks see this kind of work get used, especially if they're you know, involved in critical infrastructure.
Go ahead and put that in the show notes, but AIXCC@DARPA.mil would be the way to get in touch with you. Awesome. How about if we're trying to convince leadership, board of directors, executives about the importance of this? You're a technical expert. You've had a technical career, and so you get it. But if we're trying to talk to, you know, the pointy-haired boss, if you will, in the corner office, what is it that translates into actionable decision criteria for them?
This is probably one of the most evidence-based actions that you could empower your CISO to take with your software supply chain. I'd say if you want your CISO to sort of be a fall person and just kind of fire them the next time you inevitably have some sort of incident, I guess that's a choice. But if you want someone that's going to proactively start like securing your software supply chain and your internal kind of dev pipelines, these are exactly the type of tools that you would want to leverage. And like I said, the cost is a few hundred dollars per issue discovered. And like I said, they will only get cheaper. I think we're rapidly going to see, I think there's a lot of evidence that these systems produce on various aspects of software, both from a performance perspective, a safety perspective, a security perspective, that are all sort of byproducts of doing this sort of automated feedback loop analysis. And so I don't know, I think there's lots of opportunity here to reduce your overall liability, or at least be aware of it and then know, you know, be prepared for, you know, the, and not be surprised. I guess being surprised in the security space almost always feels bad.
Well, awesome. Any last final thoughts you want to leave before you wrap up? Or you think we covered it pretty well?
Automated patch generation is
the future.
It's the future. It's now. It's available. It's cheap. It's fast. And we will help you use it. I think that's the other. We DARPA and ARPA-H will help you use it if you would like that help.
Awesome. Well, Andrew Carney from DARPA, thank you very much for talking to us about the AI initiative. I appreciate it. For our listeners out there, if you're not already a subscriber to CISO Tradecraft, don't forget to subscribe. Tell your friends about it. We can help them in their careers as well. Follow us on LinkedIn. We have a lot more than podcasts. We'll also have a Substack newsletter. We also have postings that are out there to help you in your cybersecurity career. If you like this episode, give us a thumbs up and go ahead and get in touch with the AICXX at DARPA.mil and follow through, because you're going to find out that these people have done some amazing things that will benefit you. So thank you very much for your time and attention. This is your host, G. Mark Hardy. And until next time, stay safe out there.